Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Point 99 podcast. If you're new to the show, the Point 99 podcast is a running podcast for all runners of all abilities, the everyday runner. And that's despite Steve having a fondness for chatting to folk who like to run beyond the marathon distance. If you're new to running, we hope to have guests, topics and discussions that will help you along whatever path your journey is taking. For any seasoned runners, maybe we'll have some stories about squatting in bushes that you can relate to. Despite me sitting here with a dodgy black-coloured Pope outfit on, you may have noticed I am not Steve, but Bob Burrell, better known to some as the Kilsyth Runner. Today we are turning the tables on Steve, as we've had a request from Steve McQuillan who wanted to know a bit more about the absolute cult leader that normally hosts the show. We asked the Instagram community to get in touch and they have responded with a few questions that they would like to put to Steve. So without any more waffle from me, here's today's guest, Stephen Murdoch, Mr. Steve Runs. Stephen, how are you doing?
Thank you, Bob. I think James needs to change his name now. James McQuillan.
James McQuillan.
I know I'm bad as well. Oh, that was fantastic. That was great.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm grand. How are you?
I'm not too bad, not too bad. In the middle of Edinburgh Marathon training, watching Manchester and London and starting to now panic that I'm up next. But yeah, all good, all good.
I know that feeling. This time last year, both of us hobbling around thinking, oh, we can do that. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I was actually having a look at my Strava and it was the kind of near enough a year since I actually DNF'd at the Monklands half. I was like, I couldn't even like run a mile, yet I still thought I could turn up like a month later to do.
Optimism.
But lessons learned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Doesn't kill us, makes us injured.
That's a great, that is a t-shirt quote and a half.
Yes.
Oh, no, this is very surreal, very strange being in the in the hot seat instead of in the interviewer seat.
Yeah, because I've not let you know any of the questions that people have sent in.
No, completely blind.
Some absolute beige questions coming up for you.
Now I know how everyone feels, not knowing what's coming at you and thinking, do I remember everything? Do I remember dates? If they want to know when I ran somewhere, do they want to know all these different things? What have I said in the past? Am I going to make a complete arse of myself?
Well, I've been without dropping these. I was in a different podcast and it was one of the first guests. I think I was guest number 3 and it was like quick fire rounds.
Oh, yeah.
So the questions were actually, I don't know what's coming. And then like you see further on, once people have been listening, getting the questions, they were having some really prepared answers. And I was like, oh, mine's like absolutely terrible now.
I noticed some of these. Stopped doing those though, because people were, yeah, they were prepared. It's not fun. That takes the fun out of it.
Oh, even if it was a question, it was about my favorite running route. And I've got the hills. I've got so many beautiful trails and stuff around. And I said, the canal. I'm like, geez, it's the most boring route I've got on my step.
Because it's the easiest route.
It's the easiest, it's flat. Yeah.
Oh.
If you want, we'll get started with some of these questions we've got.
Crack into it, Bob, just at your own leisure.
Not a problem. So first question we've got is from Paige Turner. And she wants to know, why did you start running?
Why? There's two answers to that. One, because my brother is a runner. Like, he's always been a runner. And I don't know if you've got siblings, Bob, but you know what it's like. You've got sibling rivalry. I didn't think I'd ever be as good as him. But it still doesn't stop you kind of trying your hand. So that was probably the reason I started. And that was like from school days as well. In secondary school, he ran for the cross country team, like Gordonston Championships, all those sorts of things. And I was just lucky enough to get around the cross country route in PE class. And it kind of just stuck like that for a while, and I never really did anything straight away after secondary school, but I took up road cycling. And then when road cycling becomes comfortable and maybe a bit too easy, you kind of revisit and go, what else can I do? And he was still running. He's a Jog Scotland leader like yourself. He's got all this training and backing and can pump out phenomenal times, but he's not getting any younger. He's picking up injuries, and I could see his kind of bell curve going down. And I'm thinking, well, I could get in here. But the second part of that is a few years ago, quite a number of years ago now as well, my wife wanted to do the Inverness half marathon 5K. So it was a case of, you maybe should do a little bit of running. So she signed me up. So I ran because that event running anyway, because she signed me up, and that's how it started from event running. But from running perspective, really sibling rivalry. You didn't want to be the one that does nothing, but also you had something to, or someone to spur you on and kind of give you a kick up the backside. And now I'm faster than he currently is and was, which he doesn't like, but.
So what's the age difference between you and your brother?
18 months.
18 months.
So it's not a lot. It's not a lot of difference. But as I say, he was always the runner. I was always the cyclist, and he dabbled in cycling and just didn't, he knew he couldn't match me in it, so he didn't give it much of a serious go. But running wise, because I've got that 18 months and because he's got a few niggles now, back pain and just things that just hold you back a little bit, my paces are now matching his best paces, and I know I've got more in me, so it's driving him to try and repair himself and give himself time to repair, which is interesting. This would be quite fun, being able to be at a point in your almost 40s where you're actually able to compete with each other, and we could never do it when I was like 16 to 18.
So then going back to that race then, your wife signed up, was that kind of the start of your events then, or were you racing before then, or?
No, nothing before then. Parkrun wasn't even a thing up here at that point. It was just the Inverness half marathon 5K. And it kind of barrel rolled from there, snowballed, sorry. So Inverness half marathon, I've pretty much done every year since then. The Inverness 10K, I took a break from it for a while, but yeah, I've pretty much done most years since then as well. And subsequently, well, marathons and half, I suppose, ultra, Loch Ness 24 is an ultra. So yeah. Nothing before then. It was really her fault, and I know she'll be listening next door sitting giggling, because she always says that it was her that started it, and she can't really complain now whenever we go away for a weekend and it's, where can I run?
Just blame her. So with your brother then being a jog leader, did you get involved in his group, or is that nothing, anything that interested you?
His group's half an hour, 45 minute drive away from me. I do work in Inverness where he does his group, so I could, but then it means waiting around for a few hours after work. So it's one of those ones where I'm more impatient. I'd rather get home and run. And I know this is something we've discussed in the past, and I've discussed with a few people, of I'm a solo runner and I should really get myself along to a club, because I probably see a lot of benefits from it, and especially even Jog Scotland, just being around people. There is a Jog Scotland group in Ulness, but again, I just don't go down to it, where maybe should. I am taking my kind of formative steps and baby stepping into it though. So yeah, I should maybe go along and see. I have got an interest in maybe becoming a jog leader myself, but for a different reason, a work reason, try and encourage people through into a post-work run club sort of thing.
So that kind of ties in. I've got a question from Robin Banks. She said, it's more a question about how you're a community, but from afar.
Yeah.
How that feels for you, being kind of separate from the kind of central belt mafia that we are down here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You feel included, but from afar, is that?
It is, yeah. It's very hard when you first start off and you want to be included, but at the same time, it's, but 3-hour drive down for most places to most people. It's not an ideal location or situation to be in if you have that sort of personality where you let it overwhelm you. And I did for a little while let it overwhelm me. It kind of, you feel left out, but it's through no fault of anyone's, including yourself, but especially anyone else in the community. You just have to get over it and think, find people in your area that are also in the community, because there are people. Like, I've got Ultra Fran in Inverness, and she does a run club on a Sunday. I could go along and actually be part of people in the community. But again, as much as I like the idea of running with people, I'm just a big scaredy cat. Whereas I know you guys a little bit more than I know other people, so I feel more comfortable at events coming up to you and having a chat and a catch up. But yeah, no, it's very difficult if you're trying to include yourself in a wider community and an involvement, but you can't fully engage. It does kind of give you that FOMO occasionally of everyone's meeting up in the Pentlands and you're in your own little hills doing your own little thing.
Yeah, I've been similar in the whole going to races and sitting in the car until the very last minute, and you get out and walk to the start line and go. Yeah. Whereas like recently, the 20 on the 4th was like a big meet up before in a hall, and everyone's all talking.
That looked fab, yeah.
Just easy to be experiences are so good, and it just relaxes everything rather than just sitting in the car panicking. I've been sat in the car overthinking a race so much that I've just drove away and not even raced it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's so bad when you get in your own head. But the community side, even if it is just online, or it definitely helps. But
I do have that
drives
well.
You, because if you wanted to, you could probably form a community local to you.
Yeah. And then James, who asked for this episode, he did say the same as well. He was quite like a 99 community catch up. And he said, oh, I don't mind traveling. And I'm like, nobody else wants to travel to Inverness. So there are kind of thoughts afoot about maybe coming down to even Perth or Stirling, because that's not a massive drive for me. But then if I'm going to Stirling, I may as well come to Glasgow, I may as well go to Edinburgh. It's only another half an hour along the road. But I've kind of got two aspects of the community. I've got yourselves, a wider community that I know and I've met. But I also have like a small clique in a way, if you want to call it that, because when I first started my account, I got to know Muriel Dempsey, Carl Orm, Lee, and they were running the Baxter's Loch Ness. So I met up with them on the first year, and then they included me in a little group. And that was my kind of formative steps into the community. Yeah. So then I have done meetups with them every year when they come up to the Baxter's, because inevitably that they're always coming up anyway. We meet up. So I still get the community side, whether I come down to like Edinburgh and we've got the photo from last year, or it's an event up here. I still get that connection. It's just you have to almost take a step back and think, I can't be included in everything, so don't worry about it. Kind of just get out of your head a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, I suppose it's, even if you were down here, sometimes there's that much going on.
Mm.
But it's worse because you are so close, when sometimes you have to be selfish and you can't go to everything.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so thanks for that question, Robin. Next one we've got is from Will Power. He's wanting to know what motivates you to keep running. So what is it, goals, or is it health reasons, or what is your motivation? What drives Steve?
I think the answer I've always given is medals. I think we've all had family members that have gone through suppose elderly family members that have gone to the point where they can't even remember their own name, let alone anything else. And I just want to have that collection of medals that kind of almost jog your memory a little bit, and you can look back and you can, on the days where you're maybe, let's say, touch wood, I make it to 60, 70, 80, I can look back and go, I did that. I ran a marathon, I ran an ultra. Even if I am frail, or even if I'm still keeping my fitness, or whether we're all mechanical by that point in time, I can look back and know that I've done something that very few people really in history are going to do. That's always the answer I've given. I think the kind of other part of that, and it is very linked, is a few years ago I had quite a number. I had like three or four cancer scares back to back. And it kind of makes you think, well, I don't know what's coming around the next corner, so I may as well just throw myself into an event. And if I do it, I've done something that very few people will do. And if I don't, I don't. You don't know unless you try.
Exactly.
But that's kind of my main reason is so I can look back in medals and go, yeah, I remember that one. That was someday.
Or you can look and say that medal's boring. I could have designed a much better.
I've done that. Yeah.
Yeah. Am I right in saying you did the design medals in the past and things like that? Something you've been involved in. So
I've designed medals. Some of them come into fruition, some of them don't. But yeah, I've designed medals in the past, and whether it's a wooden medal, which you seem to get a lot of for sustainability reasons at events, or a metal cast one, and it's an interesting process to be in when you're working with manufacturers and clients, and you're thinking, what do you want out of the end goal, but also what's achievable? Because the, like say, Edinburgh Marathon medal is quite intricate, really, with how detailed some of the little aspects are in engravings and castings.
Yeah.
So you have to look at it and go, what's achievable and what's cheap enough for the client?
Yeah, the Edinburgh one's, I'm trying to remember mine, I'm sure one looks like a bottle opener. I'm sure it's just not.
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they should. I won't start. If I start moaning about Edinburgh, this will be my next
day. Yeah, I can't say Amsterdam looks like a bottle opener as well.
Probably is a bottle opener.
Yeah.
I've done a Mighty Deerstalker a few years ago, and that is an actual bottle opener. You can use your medal to open a bottle. I think that was meant for they had a beer stalker afterwards in the beer tent. I think it was just so you can open the bottle with your medals to save them people asking for it.
That's a good way of doing it.
Okay, next question we have is from Neil Down. Neil is wanting to know what your best running experience is.
Do we think that's a real name?
I don't know. Neil, get in touch and let us know if that's not your real name.
Sorry, best running experience?
Yes, Neil wants to know what's your best running experience.
I will say the Baxter's Loch Ness in 2022. Because I went in having had done a marathon before and knowing that I took myself way too seriously with it. I didn't appreciate what goes into a full training block. When I went into Baxter's, being the home marathon, most local to me, I had Carl Lee, Muriel, Gies was there. So I had all these people around me, and you have to get a bus for an hour, and you're on a bus with complete lunatics, and everyone else is really quiet on this bus, like dreading what's coming, trying not to visit the on-bus toilet. And here's Carl with a bubble machine that I've made him, blowing bubbles at anyone that comes out the portal, out of the toilet. And at that point, Kaylee, I knew of Kaylee, but I didn't know her well enough. And I thought, I'm pretty sure I know that lass. And it's a few seats in front, and here's Kaylee on the bus as well. And all these people that I now know that were on here, and us being a nuisance, I suppose, to everyone. But no, that it settled my nerves, having that ability to kind of not worry about what's coming. Yeah. And they were all running together, so I had the option of, do I go for fun, or do I take the immortal words of Lee Campbell, of commit to the hills. If you're going for a PB, commit to the hills. And I'm running in a kilt, so I thought, sod it. Within 5 meters of starting, sod it, I'm off. And I committed as running home marathon. Everyone's commenting on running in a kilt.
Is that a proper kilt, or is it one of those kid on towel ones? Is it
it's not a towel one. It's the lightest weight proper kilt you can get. It's a utility
kilt. I've done runs in a kilt, and the fact of kicking about and eat out in a kilt's bad enough. I mean, running a marathon.
We did look. Well, I say we. Chris Evans looked up how fast you would, what the world record is running in a kilt, and it has to be a heavyweight kilt, is like 3 hours and 35 or something along that lines. And that's in brogues as well, I think. I don't even think that's running shoes, that's brogues. So I'm not going to try that. But running in this utility kilt is really good because you've got pockets on the outside, so you can stick your energy gels in. You don't have to wear a belt because we all know the flip belts and that how much pressure they can put on your abdomen.
Yeah.
So now committed to the hills, and when you've got your locals, the people you know as well, you're seeing faces in the crowd and having that extra support that they don't know you're running, but then they see you and everyone's talking to you on the route because you're that odd guy running in a kilt. And then coming across the line and seeing my parents, my wife, my dog. I was more excited to see my dog, if anything. It was the most overjoyed I think I've been finishing a marathon so far. And it's the one that'll stand out the most. And then my brother made sure that he gave me the medal because he does the, or used to, I don't know if he's still going to, he coordinated the 10K, which runs the same day at the same time. So he finished coordinating that and came down, and he made sure he gave me the medal because he thought that'll be a little bit extra touching. I didn't really care at the end of the day. It's a medal. I didn't care who was giving it to me.
That's a good touch. Mm. I'm surprised. I thought you would have mentioned the Loch Ness 24, the first one that you done with your group. Mm-hmm. I thought that might have been up there.
It's definitely up there. To do an event that hadn't been run before, although other events of similar nature have been done, and the people that I managed to convince to come up, and I think by all accounts everyone loved that first year, and then sold a duffer the second year when it absolutely teamed down and rained for 24 hours, 48 hours. No, I did love that, especially meeting someone as nice as Emma Joy, convincing her to come up and spend 48 hours with myself, Lee, and Jamie with Emma and her partner. Just with that combination alone, sitting around a campfire, having a great laugh, enjoying life without the addition of any running, was pretty special as well.
On a more negative one, from Anita Dump, we've got, what is your worst running experience?
I'll kneel down and take a dump. Worst one will be first marathon in Edinburgh in 2022.
Okay.
And I think that really does come down to being underprepared and not giving it the time. And all the things you should give a marathon, I struggled a lot on that one.
Would this be your first marathon?
Yeah, that was the first one in Edinburgh. That was the very first marathon I'd done. Edinburgh has that special way of forecasting nice overcast weather and then delivering Costa del sunburn worth of sun. So when you're drained, you don't know what to expect. You're on a year where it's coming off the back of COVID, so it's a different start situation. You're standing around for half an hour, an hour. Anyone that ran London yesterday will know exactly what that feels like. So you're like, do I need to go to the toilet? Do I not? Didn't really appreciate that situation. Going off too fast and loving life. And then by the time you hit Musselburgh, reconsidering all your life's choices, getting to the big house was probably the worst thing I could have done. If I was going to pull out, I should have done it well before then and walk jogging it back. That is probably my worst one because I didn't see anyone on the course. I just went into that self-pity, narrow field blinker. And again, I knew people there. I knew Carl. Lee was supporting. I think Muriel was running. I saw people that I know. And then after that, I didn't see anyone. My brother was running it. His girlfriend and my wife were there, and I didn't see them. I came across the line and I was the grumpiest person that could ever exist. I just felt knackered. Give it an hour or two, I was fine, but no, it was probably one of the most torturous things that I could have put myself through.
I think I've seen your pictures from that day and your face tells it all.
Yeah. Yeah, especially coming around the last corner, just full of emotion. You hear everyone. Just, I think we. I talked about this with Emily and with other people in the past. When you've got Spider-Man passing you, and Spider-Man's got a little bit of a gut, and this older guy passes you and just looks full of life, and you're in the last kilometer. Everyone's shouting your name. You're trying not to cry because you're just that drained and that emotional. It's just the worst feeling you could ever go through. In a running perspective, I suppose, to some degree, that is probably the worst one. Closely followed by an Inverness half marathon. Now, I never used to train for the half marathons; just rock up and do them. Because why would you need to train for 13.1 miles? Well, you wouldn't know whatever the distance is. And I got pretty much all the way around without stopping for the first time. This was, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I get about 2 kilometers from the end, just completely out of puff. And this man has got this little boy on his shoulders. And he says, "Dude, you need energy, don't you?" And I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Do you want a chocolate bar?" And I'm like, "Oh, that'd be fantastic." Thinking he was going to go into his pocket and pull out a chocolate bar. No, he takes this little boy off his shoulders, puts him down, and he's got this little backpack on, and he unzips his little backpack and he gets a Freddo. this little boy's Freddo. And he gives me it. And I couldn't say no at that point. And I had to kind of just thank him and then take off. I had to force myself to run around the corner before I walked again, because I felt so bad, not just physically, but because I'd taken candy from a kid. I'd taken this chocolate from a child, and I felt so bad. So that kind of feeling bad because you've not given it enough respect, and then feeling bad because of circumstances in and around your own stupidity of not training.
Yeah, it's kind of the last thing you want as well. I've seen videos of people online, like in marathons, giving out donuts and stuff like that, and wow, I would just be sick, I think. I don't think I would get that down at all. But everyone's different, I suppose. But I'm sure he thought he was doing you a favour.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought he was doing me a favour as well, but no, he wasn't.
Oh, well, that gets us on to our next question then, from Emma Royds. She wants to know what your favourite distance is. Thanks for that one, Emma.
Chase is getting killed. He's getting skinned. Favorite distance, I'm gonna say marathon. I could easily say 5:10 or half, but seeing as I can run them any other weekend, and I do run regularly, I don't really run 5K anymore, or mostly run 10K or more on a training run every other day, and then I run a half marathon at least once a week. Usually, I mean, anyone can look for my Strava and say, at least once a week, I'll run a half marathon. So they're not really a challenge anymore. So I enjoy them, but I'd say my favorite distance is marathon, because it just takes that little something extra, and you've got to really put a lot of effort into it. So you get the enjoyment from it. As much as I think anyone that knows, especially my wife, at the end, I'm always in some state of either not very happy with my time, not very happy with my performance. But I think that's just a runner thing. Of you're always going to overanalyze what you've done. But generally speaking, I've only done, four marathons now, but probably my favorite distance.
Yeah, I think it's one of kind of hardest to master, I think, is probably why it kind of keeps us coming back.
Yeah, exactly.
In terms of like 5Ks and 10Ks, I find them absolutely horrible. In terms of racing, I'm not talking about like training runs. If you're out racing, I'd take a half marathon any day for a race. That's that kind of happy medium. But going out and going all guns blazing 5Ks and 10Ks, it's the absolute pain cave.
Yeah, I suppose if you put it in that kind of context of actually your favorite racing distance, I would still say marathon because I always feel like, even though Amsterdam was an oddity, that I felt like I had more left in me, and there's reasons why I was kind of sandbagging a little bit, even, and it was a 40-minute PB, and I was sandbagging. Half marathon just from Inverness, I felt so hard done by because I hadn't got my target, and in some respects you are blowing out your arse in certain elements, and then I still had too much left in me. 10K, I can't really say that it's a racing distance I've done too much, and I've done a lot of 10K races, but I've never properly raced it because the last time I properly raced it, I got a mega PB. I think it was 41 minutes or something along that line, 41 or 43. And the only reason I couldn't give it my all is I had the Amsterdam Marathon the week later. Mm-hmm. So for me, that race was to break in the Vaporfly 2s. It wasn't even a race. I still got that PB. So I think if I properly tried, a 10K would probably be my favorite distance if I was trying. But I so far I haven't tried, or I couldn't try because of other things in and around the calendar.
Watch this space then.
Famous last words.
Yeah. Well then I suppose that ties in with the next question about your favorite shoe. That's a question from Amanda Huggenkiss. Thanks, Amanda.
I don't know whether you created these names or he did. Yeah, it has to be the Vapor 2s.
Yeah.
You'd think I'd move on to Vapor 3s now as my favorite shoe, but I haven't done enough in them to justify the drawing or the artwork that I've got up in the gym of the Vapor 2s, the orange Vapor 2s. I think everyone that knows me well enough knows how much I love that shoe and just generally the color as well. They carried me so well in Amsterdam. They helped me achieve something I probably would never have thought possible. I'd never thought it would possible for me to run that speed. Sure, I'd run the distance twice before, but to finish with a 40-minute PB, and as I say, still having a lot left in me physically, nothing left in me mentally. I was a wreck. But the shoe helped a lot. And from someone like myself who kind of poo-pooed carbon plates and carbon rods as being, oh, you don't want to get them. That's too much money. They're not going to be that good.
Yeah, you were late to the party with a carbon shoe, weren't you?
Yeah, very late to the party. And I think there's still people that haven't even joined the party bus that are on the fence. And that's what I'm saying to them now is you need to get yourself, if you're enjoying running, but you're always struggling that little bit towards the end of a race, get yourself some carbon plates. Even if they're last generation, get them. I've got Alpha Ones. The Alpha Ones are probably my favorite training shoe because they just feel so comfortable.
I've got a pair of Alpha Ones that are almost at 400 miles, still use them.
And they shouldn't break. And no, I mean,
I think they suit my style. See a lot of the carbon shoes, especially for long runs. I find once you get into your form, into your stride, you're just clipping along.
Yeah.
Perfect. Plus the recovery, it's the foams. It's not just the carbon plates. I think it's the foams they use as well for recovery, and the fact that your legs aren't absolutely beat up the next day as well. There's a lot more to it.
Yeah, I think I could happily, and I don't run every other day very often. I think most people that follow me know that I prefer to do a Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, or a Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. That's the only time I would do a double header, just to give myself time to recover. But if I was, I would run every other day in a Nike shoe, because you're right, the foam, the spring, the recovery, they just feel so natural. They just make running enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Not to say that I've not really used very many shoes in the past. I started off with On Running, Cloud Flyers and the like. And that was when they still had...
Stonecatchers.
Yeah, exactly.
Every time I see them, I just go, oh, Stonecatchers. I'm sure they're great shoes.
Well, that's a new one. The new ones don't have the gutter in them so much. They don't have that spine but you're running along, especially where I am, you're in the middle of nowhere. You've just got gravel everywhere, stones, and you're just feeling it through your foot.
Yeah.
And that was when I started. No, so my first one was Brooks Ghosts, and I was plodding along, and then I got a pair of Ons because I saw them and they looked pretty. That's effectively the only reason I got them. And they started proving that I could go faster if I actually tried. I then went back to Brooks, and Brooks are great as an everyday running shoe. But they keep changing them. They've got rid of the model that I loved. Now I'm not going to say it just now because I can't remember which of the two it is. There's two that I really like, the Adrenalines and I've forgotten the other name, but one of them they stopped doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the shoe that was my go-to shoe. So what I'm going to do now, the other ones are all okay. I tried Hoka. Hoka were okay, but they were light. That's the only thing I could give them. They were light and they were very speedy. But I always went off too quick in them and then I hurt myself. And then the Nike was kind of just the next step. I got the Vapor 2s in a sale because of Ian. Ian recommended it on his story. I thought, well, sod it, I'll do it. Ordered them. And then, of course, here comes Jace and Ian, and just the next morning going, oh, I've got a code if you want extra money off it. No.
I was going to say that the price barrier for the carbon shoes, unless you take them when they first come out and it's silly money, then it can be expensive. But the older versions,
yeah.
So I'm sure I got my Alphas for like 120 or something ridiculous, and you get 400 miles out of it. You can't tell me that's not good value.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? For what it is, absolute quality trainer you're getting.
I think anyone who's undecided on what they want to do, to get an older generation shoe is not a bad thing. Stuart runs that, he does. He's recently gone onto that market, I think, as well. And yeah, just get a slightly older shoe. It's still going to do the same thing for you. It might not be and not have all the latest technology that they've worked into it. But if you're on the fence, if you're like me looking and going, oh, but Nike's a fashion shoe. They don't know anything about running. They're more than just a fashion shoe now. it is insane the amount of confidence that it can give you, let alone the amount of technical ability it can give you as well.
Absolutely. I would say for all Nikes, racing shoes are great. They do have some absolute bricks, but then that's what everyone they've got, their high-end range, their mid-range, and then stuff that just avoid.
It's the same with Brooks. They've got the Hyperion. I've never tried the Hyperion. So I love Brooks. I think they're a great shoe, and I've only really invested time and money into both Brooks and now Nike, but I haven't tried their Invincible. I haven't tried their Pegasus. So I don't know what their mid-range shoes are like. So I can't say that they're better than Adidas or better than Puma. I'm never going to know unless someone funds me to try every shoe under the sun. And I know other people prefer other brands. So you kind of have to find what works for you. And there might be another brand that works even better for me. But at the moment, it's Nike and it's Vaporfly.
You get a Nike outlet up near you.
I know. I would never be out of
it.
That's
so good. You go and you go, oh, I need to buy it. I can't afford not to buy that. It might not be there again.
I was so annoyed after coming down back in the last year. So it was the day before Glasgow to Edinburgh when I was down in Edinburgh, and we were staying at the village just on the outskirts, of Edinburgh. I didn't realise the outlet store was so close, and now I'm kicking myself. I was looking at it recently going, how is it so close? And I didn't get my arse along there.
Well, probably saved you a fortune.
It definitely did, yeah.
Oh, so that is your favourite shoe. Next, we've got your free long run food. That's from Hugh Jass. Thanks for that, Shug. Yeah, so your pre-long run food. Well, that's the night before or your breakfast or what is your go-to?
Usually porridge and syrup for the morning and a banana. I mean, I think anyone who doesn't have a banana beforehand will have Kaylee haunting your nightmares.
That's me. I know the benefits of it, but I just never grab it. I don't know.
It's a cycling thing as well, because I've always done it. When I was in cycling events, it's the first thing you grab. You leave your gels till later on because your banana will go soft if you don't take it early on in the event. So I might take it out running with me. I might have it beforehand, usually porridge. If I don't want the hassle of making porridge, it will just be toast and maybe some scrambled eggs. But again, who really wants to have eggs on the day of a run?
I don't know, protein before you go out. My stomach's gurgling at the thought.
Exactly. So you want to try, I try to keep it as light as possible. So even on a, let's say the longest run you're going to do is your marathon day, it's usually just porridge and a banana. So it's stodge in you. Night before, usually a pizza. Usually a pizza or pasta, unless it's the Edinburgh Marathon in 2023 and it's a pepperoni pizza. I'll never trust in that menu again, but no,
away
usually
from the
pizza.
Kind of oily, fatty type stuff. So it's not going to settle well, is it?
No. Or at least if I'm going to have it, I'll have it midday the day before and then go for a pasta. So it's usually just as usual what you would. What would you class a runner to have? Well, you suggest a runner having just bulky, stodgy foods that aren't going to make you want to stop at every port-a-loo.
And then we've got Joe King is wondering what you have during your long runs.
Currently, and well, I suppose during the last couple of marathons, is what everyone's plugging just now, as much as they're plugging, and I know you've got them as well. Voom Energy. Voom Energy bars I've been using for a couple of years now. But as much as you see there's a lot of ambassadors and sometimes you see products and you think, I'm not trusting that because they're just throwing money and products at people. They are genuinely a game changer. They don't take up very much space. They've got more to them than a gel. And I still take gels with me. But typically a bar where you've got a bit of bite, it's almost like a fruit pastel. You can suck away on it or you can chew it and it gives you that slow release extra. Voom Energy is probably my go-to, and it's the green bar. I'm not even sure what flavor that is. It's just the flavor of green.
Yes, we're quite lucky as my club, Close South Runners, that Voom approached us to send us some stuff out, and a lot of beginner runners, I've tried to give my guys gels and stuff like that, and they're like, oh, what is this? Some people just don't like it. They can't. So that's a great alternative for them.
Yeah.
The same with like the chews. I've tried like Vela Forte, the wee
bit
of chews, which are good, but I think it's again a cycle thing where you've got time to faff about. See,
you're right. Jelly babies in the back in the back of your cycling bib, having jelly babies or Haribo's. Strawberries, that's to me more what I would do there. But when I'm out running a long run, I don't want to take anything super bulky that needs a lot of faff, or you just want to reach into your belt or into your arm pocket, whatever you've got, and just snap off a bit. I used to use Kendall Mint Cake as well, but the only reason I don't use that anymore is because it's too sticky. You know, we're running with a sticky hand.
Is that from the actual Kendall Energy people?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I've used them before. They were quite nice.
They're lovely. It's just they're sticky.
Yeah. Yesterday I had my SIS Beta I've been using. So it's like 40 grams of carbs, which means you don't need as many of them. But yesterday in the pouring rain, could I get this bloody pack open? So I was trying to do an easy run. I was trying to keep my heart rate low. Couldn't open it. My fingers were slipping on it. My teeth. And time I got it open, my heart rate was at 170 because I was fighting with this bloody thing.
Frustration.
On the So I don't know. I've got High Five. They do the reusable, so you don't get gel packs. They send you out and you pour it into like a soft flask. Yeah. I don't know whether you can put all my Beta fuels into that and use the soft flask with the gels.
You should. And I've done that with last year. I was one of the ambassadors for ActiveRoot, and I'll still use ActiveRoot. I love what they're doing, and I love the taste of their stuff. But I use that for trail running. I don't know. I'm very particular with what I take on what I'm doing. So if I go for a long trail run, I'll take ActiveRoot because I can make it the consistency I want. And then I'll take their ginger chews as well, because you want It's just I just associate with trail running, and that's what I stick to. But yeah, if I'm long running on a road, Voom Energy, and I will take a Science and Sport gel. 5.5 are good as well, but I find they're too watery for me.
Yes, but it's like everyone's personal preference, isn't it?
Exactly.
But
It's
different
the same as
people.
a shoe. It's personal preference.
But I did have, I was just name dropping brands now, but I don't know if you had the Unived.
Can't say that I have.
But their
I might have seen them,
their
but
packet at the top was almost like a paper opening. So it was
okay.
so easy to open, but it had a kind of thicker plastic bit. So the top didn't come off. So it's not like you're left with two parts and, you know, some people end up throwing the top away and
Always,
that's
yeah.
not good for the environment and all that kind of stuff. But this all stayed as one and it was so easy. But yeah, yesterday I was thinking, oh, if I this happens on race day and I can't, because even not just rain, even sometimes my hands can get so sweaty you can't get a gel packet open. I'm like,
Do
I
you,
need to get a better way of doing this.
are you taking a gel belt or anything?
Yeah, I've got my shorts I've got gel pockets and I've
Ah,
now
so you have
started
pockets as
taking
well.
a hand flask. It's one that just kind of clips
Oh,
onto my
clips.
thumb,
Yeah.
and it's got a zip so I could put some gels in there too, because I'm bad for not hydrating during the run.
Yeah.
I'm not a vest wearer, as in a hydration vest. I do
Yeah,
have an
yeah.
actual vest, but I don't hydrate very well when I'm out, so I'm like, I need to start, even just for keeping your gut and all that calm and stuff. There's no need not to be hydrating when you're out.
Yeah, well, training runs, I will always take, for long training runs, I'll always take the hydration vest, because it gives you the nearest, even though you're training with a little bit of weight, so that's always going to be beneficial to you in the long run.
Yeah.
But then on race day, you've not got, it's not as if you've got tables of people giving you drinks on your long training run. So if you're training with hydration, you know that you're going to actually use every station on a marathon route, at least,
Yeah.
if not a half marathon route.
Yeah. See, I was bad when I first started with the vest. I didn't know you were supposed to like take the air out it. So I was swish, 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 swish. And I was like, how do people do this? It's driving me mad. I need a pee now. All I can think about is swishing water. This is terrible. But yeah, absolute rookie mistakes.
Stuff you learn. Stuff you
Oh,
learn as you go.
exactly. Oh, I'm still learning. Every day is a school day. So after your runs, I've got Jim Hall. He's after. What is your after run treat?
Don't really have one.
Yeah. What do you reach for when you go home after your run?
Usually a bath. whatever's on the go, really. Usually speaking, by the time I get back, I'm not like a super early morning runner, you know, Bob. I'm more of a midday to late afternoon. So if I'm doing my long run on a Saturday or Sunday, by the time I'm getting home, it's usually dinner time. So it's whatever, if I'm cooking, which is very rarely, whatever I'm cooking, but it's usually the wife's got something on, or if it's a takeaway weekend. So it's jump in the bath. If I've got any Erdinger, maybe an Erdinger, but I don't really grab. I'm not someone that goes, oh, I've got something that's a treat. I can treat myself now. It's
Yeah, you don't
just
have the
whatever.
like a chocolate milk sitting waiting, or you've got
No,
an
not
iron
really.
brew that people crave or whatever. There's just some people get strange things that keep them going when they get back, but
Not really. I maybe don't do the right thing sometimes of post run nutrition,
get the
hydration.
protein down you straight away.
Yeah, exactly. I don't take protein shake. I've always associated that with lifting weights, and I know that it's got its benefits for runners, and I maybe should actually introduce that into my routine, but I never really grabbed anything specific at the end of a run, though.
Hope that answers your question there, Jim. What I've got now, I've got Justin Case is asking, why did you start the podcast?
Was really the combination of Runner Man Steve and myself, having very similar goals and very similar times. And at the time, I only knew of What the Fartlek, and I liked what they were doing, but at the same time, I couldn't really get super on board with them. And I love listening to them by week, like, what, twice a week now. But at the time, there was a certain hurdle I just couldn't overcome. And I tell you, actually, I know exactly what it was. It's their accent. This is the reason why I lost a good friend of mine through COVID. And it wasn't because of COVID. He and this kind of goes back to why I run as well. He got a double pulmonary embolism on his lungs, and then he died very quickly. And he was only 32. 32, 33. And it makes you think, well, he can't run anymore, obvious reasons. I better look after myself and do the things that he was never going to do a marathon. He was a gamer, and yeah, he was from Manchester. So it was their accents. And I thought, well, I like what they're doing. They don't talk about running very often. So I got in contact with Steve, and he was in that kind of thought. He wanted to do something as well, but he didn't want to do it alone. So it was that combination of, you know, we've never spoken. We don't know each other really that well, other than as a square. Let's give it a go though and see what happens. And as it didn't kind of worked out in a way where Ryan was starting out as well, and other podcasts were starting out. It kind of, there was a bit of an explosion in running podcasts, and it's always nice to hear other people's opinions and views from running. So I'll listen to every other podcast. I try not include it into my own. I don't want to steal anything they're doing, but at the same time, you want to give a rounded perspective from every runner. And yeah, as my answers today are showing, what I do is not what you do, is not what everyone else does, but it works for me. And we wanted to show other everyday runners that it's okay to be disappointed. It's okay to do what they're doing. It was never going to be something, I think, a long-term thing. I think to get season 5, and having done 3 series solo, it was never going to be that. It's just kind of ended up that way, and I'm enjoying it. I am enjoying it. It was never planned to be this long. But when Steve had to take a step back for the reasons that he had to take a step back for, it kind of gave me that tough decision of, do I continue solo or do I just call it a day? And I do enjoy it. It's a good hobby to have, and it doesn't take up that much time really. I could make it take up a lot more time by doing other things with it, but I enjoy talking to people as much as speaking to like people like JP. I was really, I don't know why I was so nervous. That was probably my worst episode to date. From my perspective, it's nice to get to speak to people either like yourself, people that I've met and know, or people that I've not had the pleasure of meeting in person yet. Yeah, it's just, if it continues for another couple of seasons, so be it. If it ends after season 5, it ends after season 5. I'm happy with how far it's gone.
Why do you think you were so nervous with the JP one? Do you think that was like potentially opening up to a bigger audience possibly you thought could be listening to it, or just because it's someone that you've listened to for so long and it was interacting with them?
I think it's more that. I think it's because I listen to him twice a week now, and he's not a celebrity, but in the grand scheme of things, it's like watching someone on a TV all the time. They do become almost a celebrity to you. And then it's that kind of nervousness of, he's so well versed in what they do, and he's got a good connection and interaction with Rob and Matt and that, and you kind of feel like you almost want to deliver that as well, but you know you're not going to deliver that because I've never spoken to him before, and I was never going to be. I don't worry about numbers. As long as one person is enjoying the podcast, that's all that matters to me. I do sometimes hope that an episode will do better for the guest. And I think that's just because I want that the guests to get the validation that their story is worth a big audience. but I know that it's never going to draw a massive audience, and it doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. Numbers are just numbers at the end of the day. Same as time should just be a time when you're running an event. As I say, as long as one or two people are enjoying it, that's all that really matters.
Yeah, I think you can't force these things or fake them. It's like with the fartlek stuff, they actually know each other in real life. It's just pals that are talking and having a laugh. And as you say, sometimes it's not even about running.
Most of the time, it's not about running.
Yeah.
Unless they've got a guest on that's actually a runner.
Listen to a few of their stuff where you feel like you're at a party and you're kind of an outside guest and you don't really know what's going on.
Lots
of in jokes and stuff, but if you're a regular listener to that, then you'll know what's going on because they're a community and that's how it's all formed.
And you get invested in it as well. It's even to the point where I wanted to message Ryan recently, especially with, I think his plan is to have a special episode for London Marathon catch up. But I want to know how the boys are getting on, because he started off with the podcast saying they were beating each other's times. And maybe this goes back to my sibling rivalry. I want to know what their PVs are doing, but he's not mentioned it in a while. And that's the sort of thing you feel invested in someone else's life and someone else's friendships that you kind of go, it's almost like you, as you say, you're at a party and you're just silently holding your drink, listening to our conversation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, there's lots of it for your podcast, like sort of like Lee that I hadn't been aware of before, and now regularly following what he's up to and up the Pentlands with Jace and stuff like that. You do mm-hmm. become invested in other people's stories, and your I suppose your net casts a bit further out, and it's good.
I think if we've done anything so far with the podcast, it has introduced some people to other people that they might not have otherwise. And you're not a million miles away from each other, a lot of you guys. But then there's a lot of people in the Central Belt, there's a lot of runners, and you may never have come across each other, but through whether it's ourselves, whether it's through Ryan, whether it's through any other means, it helps people connect. Is probably the most rewarding part about it is connection, helping other people feel part of our community, whether it's the 99 or whether it's anything else. Feeling included is always going to be a good thing.
And it's even I've had things like my Jog Scotland work. I've had people that have been thinking about starting their own groups reaching out to me, asking for advice and what I did and any tips I would give them and stuff like that. So it's not just about running, their actual running. It's like giving something back to the community and things. And it's good how that can develop. It's great. It's,
and you must feel that validation as well of their approaching you, because you're doing what you might sometimes look and go, oh, am I doing everything right? But then they're looking at you and going, Bob's doing everything that I would like to do. You must have that kind of validation of this is pretty cool.
This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is what I actually do.
Yeah, yeah.
So people come to run with us for a night and I'm like, oh Christ, we better do proper warm-ups. We better get a good stretch at the end. We better. No.
Do as I say, not as I do.
We always do. I've never stretched so much in my life since I started this group.
What's stretching, Bob? What's stretching?
That's when I know I'm tight. Yes, I think we've got one last question from, where are we? From Antique. Anne wants to know what's next for Steve.
Event-wise, I've got a month of mayhem. I'm calling it a month of mayhem, even though it's slightly more than a month. So my next event is Loch Ness 24.
Yeah.
Coming up again. So that's August, September. It was going to be mixed doubles, a tackle this time, even though there are people coming up for it that are part of the wider group that we're there for, who dropped the Deber. They're going to be solo runners. There's probably going to be some small teams. Not to say that we're not still the Dibbers or we're not still the Cult or whoever we're calling ourselves at a particular time, but they're doing their thing. And this year I was going to do my thing with Lorna. Now, Lorna's not been very well recently. She's got an autoimmune issue, but she's also got viral meningitis. And then that's not something you get over very quickly. And I know she's stubborn and she's reeling the fact that she's maybe not going, or she's definitely not going to get to do the Ultra X Scotland 50. And she's seeing the community moving on, and she wants to be out doing it as well. She was my partner for the Loch Ness 24, and I don't know if that's a wise thing now. Not so much for myself, but for her. If she's not fit to do it, I don't want to subject her to something that's going to make her ill in the long run. And I hope that she knows that too. So it's that conversation of what's good for her. I'll do whatever. I can go solo and do that as a big challenge, because I've done two small teams so far. And it was great doing a three-person team with Lorna and Ben, the Barefoot Daddy, even though we were part of a much bigger family in the grand scheme. To do a trio was great. But you're always waiting for that one person to come back. You're always waiting for the dibber. Whereas if you're solo, you can go whenever you want.
Is that an itch you need to scratch then?
Possibly. I do want to do an ultra at some point, whether it was this year or next year or whenever. I want to do a 50K ultra, at least one. And some people maybe look and go, but you've done the Loch Ness 24 twice. That's an ultra. Oh, yes, but I've not also done it nonstop. To me, an ultra is doing something nonstop. That's just the way I look at it. And I did, 56 kilometers worth of laps last year. And I loved it. It was great. As much as I was a grumpy bastard at one point, and I have apologized to all the people I was grumpy to, it's something that I might need to do solo, and I don't want to subject Lorna to it, but I've got that. It's already signed up for. I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully it'll be much better weather than last year. Then a week later, I'm doing the Kinloss Festival of Running, which is a half marathon on, for anyone that knows or doesn't know what Kinloss is, it's a military base. I grew up there from a very young age. My dad was in the RAF and we were based there for a little while. So it's almost like where I remember some of my first memories growing up is Kinloss. So when I saw that this was an option, there was a backyard ultra, there was a half marathon, and there was some smaller distances, I thought, well, 7 days, that's enough time for me to recover to do a half marathon. I don't need to go out and try and set the world's fastest time or anything, just to go out to run on an airfield that has quite a lot of military history to it. It is pretty cool. And having grown up there for a short part of my life.
To I'll be quite trailly as well then, that one, Matt.
It's actually just on a runway. It's one of Scotland's longest runways. It's like that and Prestwick Airport are the two runways that can accommodate some of the biggest planes in the world. So it's literally running on a completely flat runway and around some of the taxiways. There's no trails about it at all.
But there's no headwind that day.
Oh, I know. It's going to be, if there's a headwind, if it's pelting down with snow, rain, hail, whatever, it's going to be torture. And if it's sunny as well, it's going to be baking on the middle of a runway. So plenty of lube that day. And then just around about, I think it's within about 20 days later, I've got the Baxter's Loch Ness Marathon. I still haven't had the conversation with myself as to what I want to achieve from it, whether I want to push more than the 3:45, which is, that was the chip time from Amsterdam. Strava time was like 3:43. And I know I can go faster. Mentally, I'm in a much better place than I was at Amsterdam. There were circumstances that made it very difficult. Very, very difficult. But I'm in a much better place. So I think I could get closer to a 3:30. I don't know if I'll ever get a 3:30. I'm never going to put that pressure on myself. But I think I get closer to it because I had a lot left in me in Amsterdam. So it goes down to how my training block would go or whether I go for the fun of it. Because I know there's a few people, if they haven't signed up within the community, they're considering it. I know Stuart runs a lot. That he does is coming along, and how fast he has been recently, he may go for a flyer there, and I might try and kind of hold on to his waistband and get pulled along. And then we've got, I think Ian runs and cycles was thinking about coming up if he hasn't already, given his issues, he may reevaluate that. But then if he comes up, it might just be for a social plod for himself. And there's a lot of other people that I can't think of right now that will be up for it. And it could be a great social run, social marathon.
Well, still a bit of time for anyone that's thinking about it. You've still got a very generous block in starting from now.
Well, that's it. Rachel Spears, she was considering it at one point as well. If there were people coming up, there's still plenty of time to sign up. And having run
it's
it
the
before.
Digs that put me off. I keep meaning to it and I leave it too late. And then the digs, I'm like, ah, that's ridiculous, guys. Come on.
Yeah, if you book early enough, you're fine.
Yes.
You can get some place. Inverness isn't a big place. So if you get Airbnb that you feel might be miles away from the buses, it's not miles away. Don't worry. I ran 10K to get to the start line last year, and then you sit on a bus for an hour. So that's your warm up done. It's not a big place. The transport's okay. You can stay out of Inverness as well. You can stay, well, I'll probably stay with my brother, or I could stay at home, and it's a 40-minute drive in, half an hour on a good day. So there are places you can commute from. So now that's my next marathon, unless anything else comes up in between times. I have had the conversation with Gary Dempsey and Chris Evans about doing a 50K between now and then, but I don't think any of the 50Ks that I would like to do will give me enough time to really consider, especially Loch Ness 24, giving that a good go. Without giving myself time to recover, I would probably end up just injuring myself, and then I wouldn't get the half marathon and the marathon done.
So you pick one as your goal, and then the other ones can support.
Yeah, exactly.
If you try to hit them all, you could end up missing them all.
Exactly, that's it. And if I go for the 24 as a goal, trying to achieve something like Rachel McPherson did, or Kaylee did, or Mike Houston, some of the phenomenal distances they did last year, or the times. If that's my goal, that's my goal. And then I just do the other two for fun and just get around without injuring myself too much.
Yeah.
At the moment, that's the three. That's the month of mayhem. And I was not long before we started here saying to James McCullen, what's next on his cards? Because that was his first marathon yesterday at London, and his girlfriend has suggested, and they've spoken about maybe coming up for Loch Ness as well. And as much as Emily insists that you can't see the loch, you can see the loch from most of it. It is a lot of downhill. It's not a net downhill race, but it's a fun race. But it'll be much better with people around you that you know, because there are sections where there's no spectators. You might be on your own running. So that's a tough thing to get around if you're not used to solo running like I am.
Yeah, see, it's one that I used to always poo-poo, as in, it's just a downhill marathon. What's the point of that? And now when I've actually looked at the course, there's like quite a few ups in there as well. It's not just a straight downhill, let's all go gung-ho for 26 miles. It's you're up and down, and it's a fair challenging one.
It is definitely a challenging one. There's this particular hill that always will stick in, because I've cycled that route a number of times on the Loch Ness Etap, which is next weekend. And you come down this really steep descent, but as soon as you hit the bottom, you're back up again into a town called Foyers.
Yeah.
And that's part of the Ultra X Scotland 50 as well. You've got to run up this. You start at Loch End, and you've got to run up this really steep climb. And last year I was there to support Kaylee. I had the camera. I had to hide the camera until Kaylee arrived, because people thought I was an official photographer, and they started running up this hill, which was torture for them. I was like, I'm not an official photographer, don't worry. But this is the same. There's the road itself runs very close to that same course. And you've got to carry as much speed as you can coming down this descent to then carry up into Foyers, and then you're downhill again. But then you are gradual downhill to a flat, and then you're right, you're back up again. And the last time, I've only done Baxter's once, the marathon. And there's a hill at Doors. You come past the campsite for the Loch Ness 24, and it is uphill. It's uphill. It's uphill. It's uphill. It's a killer. Yeah. And I walked it. I think most people walk that hill, but I would love to do the event running the whole thing. And just knowing that I've done the marathon without stopping. I did Amsterdam without stopping. Edinburgh, both times I've stopped for various reasons. But to do another marathon without stopping would be great. I've only done Amsterdam so far, not stopping, and that's, yeah, it's got good memories as much as I look back and think I could have done so much more. But I would love to go back to there as well. It just clashes with the events this year, and it costs so much money.
Yes, it does that. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck for your month of mayhem. And good luck with the future of the pod. Hopefully many more episodes and seasons to come. Lots of more interesting guests.
I hope so. I've got a few signed up already. They've committed to what you know is maybe a bit of a blindfold torture session. I don't tell anyone what's coming up. Although one of those made me promise that I'll give them a list of questions beforehand so they don't stumble their way through it too much.
Yes,
but I didn't find this was too bad. It's not as bad as you might think it would be.
No, I just need to thank all the people that have sent these questions in.
Yourself and Jace coming up with names. Oh, no, it's been spot on. I've loved that. It does give a very good insight into what it feels like from the other side. But then going back to like just how it all started with Steve as well, I would never say never to having a co-host again. It does give you that flexibility of if by doing a weekly podcast, you can't both make a week, then one person makes a week. It gives you more flexibility than having to work your life around a podcast.
Shares the load.
It does share the load, exactly. So if anyone's ever interested in coming on and even trying out a single co-host, like Bob was dropped in Italy, but it was always the plan that he would be co-hosting with Jace, but you were dropped in it as a solo host. So no, I can't thank you enough for that. And it's again for Jace as well for going and doing a lot of the legwork as well. It is really good. I would have loved your podcast if it was going to be a thing, but I understand now that it's unlikely going to be a thing now.
Yeah, it's one of these things we talked about it because we've seen not a gap in the market, but there's things that we liked about podcasts and there's things we thought we would like more of the wee community discussions and cheering folk on and what they've done. But then it's kind of, as soon as you mentioned it, it's kind of picked up elsewhere and it's kind of covered.
Yeah.
And then as we've seen, there's quite a lot of podcasts dropping just now.
Yeah, so, there are.
So is there a need for another one to discuss similar things? So that, and we have no time. We tried to do one. We're going to do about half an hour. And I think it was like an hour and 45 minutes or something.
You still hadn't finished, had you?
Us waffling absolute nonsense, and it was like midnight.
I would have loved it though. I mean, there's a kind of genuine thing I would expect from yourself and Jace of genuine conversation and genuine laughs. It's not false.
You're saying you should just release. I know it's dated now. What would we discuss? I'm like, should release it anyway. But I'm like, I can't remember what we talked about.
But pop it up, see what people think, and if it doesn't have to be anytime soon. I know Jace has got a lot on. You've got a lot on as well. But the kids are going to get older and then they're going to have less time for their dads. So it's maybe something for a few years down the line.
The thing is, though, I know how good we are. So if we put it up, everyone will love it. And then we're just going to get hounded to do it. So it's probably best not. Just leave the mystique of it would have been amazing if we did it, but we're not going to do it. So.
Open a Patreon then and they have to pay you for it. You could then fund your running shoes, Bob. Think about it that way.
We'll pay us to shut up.
Only fans episodes.
Can you imagine? Nah, we get cancelled, I think. Horrendous.
Well, no, I did love that. And I'm looking forward to kind of hearing what people think of this. And I know we did an introduction on myself many, many moons ago and kind of just scratched the surface. And again, there's probably a lot more we could talk about in the grand scheme of things, and maybe answers that I possibly would give slightly differently given an hour difference in the day, let alone a different day altogether. But I think most of my questions, if not all of them, have been genuinely. That's my answer.
That's the best way. I always think it's just a quick chat and the answers are what they are.
Yeah.
You can always, if we'd done it again tomorrow, you could say it differently. Same way when I came on your pod. I kind of finished, I thought, oh, maybe never had much energy in some of those questions, or I could have said that differently, but we're just chatting. It's just chatting about running, and there we go.
I think everyone's the same. Like, even Jace is like, oh, I didn't say this, I didn't do that. And I'm like, well, I can always have you back on. I'm never going to turn someone away. Like, if you want to come back on, Bob, I would happily have you back on. I'm never going to turn anyone away because it's a genuine conversation, and it helps people when they're out running to have genuine conversation in their ears. I benefit a lot from listening to other podcasts. I usually find if I'm out, I tune out a lot and I end up getting PBs like by a couple of seconds, but still getting PBs because you're just invested in a conversation.
Yeah. Or the faster I run, the quicker I get to turn this guy off.
Yeah. that too. No, that's been great. Are you doing an outro, or do you want me to do a post-interview outro myself?
I can leave that to you then, either.
Yeah, no, we'll do that.
Take it back to the normality.
I'll just have to thank you once again then, Bob. And just let anyone that's listening give Bob and Jace a message and thank them for a fantastic job today.
Well, thank you.
And there we have it, a special bonus episode as hosted by Bob Burrell, the Kilsyth runner, with myself in the guest hot seat. I actually really did enjoy that one. It's nice to see everything from a different perspective, feel what the guests might be feeling, and just generally have a good conversation with a great guy. Thanks once again to Bob for stepping in. Originally, it was going to be both Bob and Jace, the Edinburgh runner, but unfortunately, Jace had to pull out. He's got a lot going on just now, but I can't thank the guys enough. Jace did some legwork there as well, and then Bob stepped in. That's why throughout the episode, I was referring to Jace, thinking he'd come up with these names, but in reality, it was all on Bob. But it did give me a good laugh and really relaxed a lot of the worries about what was coming up. Thank you also to James McQuillan for requesting the episode. It's been a long time since I've did my first introduction as to who I am and what I have run. It's been a whole year since that episode came out, and yeah, a lot happens in a year, so it was great to touch on things and just see questions that maybe Steve didn't ask at the time, and then also have a different perspective on some of the questions that I might have been asked back then as well, and how things might change over the course of a year. It's also the most laid back episode I think we've had so far. Even now you can tell that I've got no notes, no script. I'm just winging it and seeing how it goes. It is kind of very freeing not having anything to read or any notes and pointers, but at the same time, it's a bit of a safety net sometimes having that catchment, knowing that I'm not waffling or repeating myself. But as a one-off, I can't help but enjoy it, can I? But as I say, that was a bonus episode. It does lead us into season 5. I have decided I am doing a season 5, as I mentioned in the conversation there with Bob. I've already got 5 people secured, and we're going to start recording those episodes very soon, and we'll get them out hopefully in the next fortnight, if not in the next week. This could be the preemptive strike to get y'all back into the rhythm of having the 99 in your ears. I hope in the break you've had a fantastic time, no matter what you've got up to, whether like James McQuillan, you were running the London Marathon, as so many of the faces from the wider community were, and what an awesome day that was, following all the little dots going around the map on the tracker, watching on the TV, seeing a few familiar faces on the big screen, and seeing all the squares with a lot of emotion, a lot of happy smiley faces. I don't think I've seen any negativity. I don't think anyone's been disappointed, which is really, really good to see. I'm glad that you all enjoyed the event. And the same with the Manchester Marathon as well. It's been great seeing you guys absolutely smashing it in the interval. But as I say, we'll be back very soon in the next week to fortnight so we can start shouting you all out again with all the events that happen over the spring, summer, and going into the autumn. Anyway, I'm going to draw a line under the episode here. I'll just reiterate what I do on every episode, and I'm not even going to read my script here. If you want to follow what I'm doing over on Instagram, you can find me at The Point 99 Podcast. That is also the case on Facebook. Just hit up the search bar for The Point 99 Podcast. If you want to follow my own page, you can do so at Mr_Steve_Runs. I'll be answering DMs on both accounts, so if you ever have any questions that you want covered in an episode or topics that you want me to have a discussion about, then feel free to let me know. You can also get in contact via email at point99podcast@gmail.com, which to this day has only ever had one listener email come in. The rest have all been business type emails, but if you ever want to get in contact, you can do so via all of those means. Finally, you can hop on over to our website. I've done a little bit of a refresh there. It's thepoint99podcast.com. Just spent a little bit of time, made it a little bit fresher, add some new color schemes and vibrancy to it. You can find the usual links to merchandise, etc. But I'm not going to plug that right now. You can do what you want to do there. I'm not going to try and encourage any more than I already have in the past. But you can also find all the episodes playable through the launcher and player that are on the website. That's it though. That's all I have for you in this bonus episode. I'm going to reiterate one more time. Thank you very much to everyone that made this episode happen, to Bob, to Jace, to James, and to you guys, the listeners. I'm looking forward to getting the ball rolling and getting on with season 5 and hearing what you guys think as always. But until that time comes, with whether it be the next week, whether it be the next fortnight, I hope you stay safe, enjoy your runs, and you will hear from me soon.